bread, he opens it with the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me. And when the Lord Jesus read that, he said, today is the scripture fulfilled in your eyes. And so they saw the fulfillment of the scripture. And today the Lord Jesus is not here with us in body, but he has given us his Spirit to continue that healing work. And so I think that's always an important part as we remember we cannot heal anybody, can we? The Spirit of Christ, the Lord Jesus, heals. We have the privilege and responsibility to be his hands and his feet. But it is through his Spirit, through his word, that real healing takes place. And I know that's wherever we are, there are hurting people all around us, and the same way in Ireland. And I'm looking forward to hear how God continues to move there as they're working on starting a wilderness boys camp there and all the needs there. And we're excited, as I have read some of the newsletters from there. And it seems a touch of home to have Jonathan and his family here this evening. Because in the last number of years in Europe, we had quite a bit of contact with each other. I don't know if anyone's geography, how far is Ireland from the mainland of Europe? Is it far, near, pretty close, isn't it? What separates it? Anyone want to tell us? So that, you got it down pretty good. That's the Irish Sea, and so if you go by vehicle, you've got two bodies of water to cross, plus England there, and so that made for a long trip. But they started having some real cheap flights between Belgium and Ireland, and so sometimes for €1. Plus the taxes, which made €50, you could fly to Ireland and back. So that made that we began having a lot of contact with the brothers and sisters there, which we really cherished. Now, for those of you who like to make connections, some of us older ones like to do that. Most of you would probably know Jonathan's parents. Dan and Barbara Yoder served in Faith Mission Home for a number of years, and now in Ireland for a number of years. And then Jonathan's wife, Joyce, is a niece to Evelyn, Mrs. Steve Miller from here. And she's a great niece to Mandy and Fanny. So her grandparents, Perry and Isley, they moved to Virginia from here a number of years ago, many years ago. I think some of you younger ones would think. One more thing that I think, I don't know if Jonathan was going to talk about this or not, but just to make sure that you know, there is the Republic of Ireland and there's Northern Ireland. Probably most of us know that, but they're from the Republic of Ireland, which is not part of the United Kingdom. It's an independent country, as opposed to Northern Ireland, which we often hear about. So with that, I just want to give Jonathan the rest of the... Oh, yeah, I forgot the...
Good evening. Christian greetings from the name of Christ and greetings from Ireland. It's a pleasure to be with you here tonight. Thank you, Paul, for the introduction and... It's very interesting being here in Kansas. It's my first time. I've been here a few hours now. And thank you for the welcome, your presence, your interest in the work tonight. It's, it is sort of a taste of home meeting Paul's again. We were very close to them. And a few of you we know, not many, but we look forward to sharing the work with you. It's... my privilege to share a little bit about the work in Ireland. You can't say much in an hour's time, I have about 170 slides or so, and I just give you a little glimpse of the work that we do there. My family moved in 1996, just about 15 years ago, that my parents and six of us children moved from Sturtstraft, Virginia. As mentioned, my parents are Dan and Barbara Yoder. And so we've been there ever since, coming and going, but mostly there. And in 2003, I married my wife, Joyce. She used to be Joyce Miller from Kelowna, Iowa, one of David Lee Miller's girls, a granddaughter of Edward F. Miller. Most of you might know him. And so in 03, we married, and she moved over with me, and we started a family. God has blessed us with four young children, and we'll have a picture of us here before the night's out. I'm sure most of you will remember the name William McGrath as well. I'm sure he was in this church more than once. He has been in almost every single plain church in the world, almost, and especially in the States. Everybody knows him. He's still with us there in Ireland. He's a great brother in the church. He personally asked to be retired from speaking duties. Like all of us, he's getting older, but he's showing his age more, getting very forgetful, very hard of hearing, that kind of thing. So, but he still lives close by. His wife and daughter attend regular, are members, and we're very glad for their presence. I don't have a good picture of them, but I'll try to point them out during the evening. I'm sure Paul has told you before that mission work is nothing glamorous. We've found out that mission work is mostly work. It's just plain, ordinary work. You're here building God's kingdom in Kansas, and God has chosen us to build his kingdom in Ireland. It's much the same type of work. People are humans around the world. And so I'm just glad to be able to show you a little bit how you can help us pray for the work there. Just a bit of a question. I don't know most of you. Just wonder how many are aware or how many receive the Boys Camp newsletter that we email out periodically? Okay, a few of you, because you should have got one just this last week, I think. What is on that newsletter, I will be sharing more in depth tonight, and I'll give you the address at the end that anybody can subscribe to that e-newsletter. We don't print it out yet at this point. It's just cheaper to send it to hundreds, thousands of people in one time online. So anybody's welcome to subscribe to that. And I'll tell you at the end. So I think with that I'll start. You can save your questions till the end, or you can shout them out as we go along, whichever you prefer. It's up to yourselves. Testing, testing, can you hear me? Okay. God's Good Earth, as seen by Google 2 years ago. I'll point out United States on the left in the circle there, and just across the water, inside the little red box, is the island of Ireland. Paul pointed out the land and the sea we have to cross to get to the continent, and I'll have better pictures of that later. This is now the island of Ireland. In the center here, center of the east, is the capital of Dublin. About 25% of the population live nearby there. It tends to be green year-round. It's called the Emerald Isle. Most of you might know that. Along the west coast, you can see the brown is very rugged, barren mountains, and I'll have pictures of some of that later. But to get an idea of the comparison to the state of Pennsylvania, that's a comparison. And I'll have a little bit more later. Down in the southeast here, in Dunmore East, is where we're located. Southeast coast. You can just see a little bit of Wales here. We can take a ferry across here. It's about a 3.5-hour ferry ride across there, or a little bit into Scotland up here is a closer. Otherwise, England is over in here. Now, this compares the island of Ireland here, again, superimposed over the state of Indiana. And you can pick out your state over here. I don't know, I didn't do the comparison to Kansas, I'm afraid, but you can see the size comparison. Population is similar to Indiana, and the square mileage is also similar. So it's a fairly small island, and similar into one of your size states here in the east. Now, Paul made mention of the fact that there's Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. There's six counties in the north have stayed with the UK or Britain, and 26 counties in the south make up the Republic of Ireland. This is where the fighting is taking place still to this day. It's a little more peaceful, but there's still shootings and bombings on a small scale going on up there. It's unfortunate between the British and the Irish. The Irish want to chase out the British and make it all one country of Ireland, but the British say, no, this is our country, you leave us alone. But thankfully it doesn't reach us down here in the southeast again. County Waterford is where we are. We're in the county of Waterford, the village of Dunmore East, and the city of Waterford is our nearest city. The Irish flag, President Mary McAleese. She's mostly a public figurehead. She doesn't really carry political power. Her husband, Martin. And the guy with the big stick, Antishak Brian Cowan. I should have got one of you to pronounce that word. It's Irish for Prime Minister. But the Irish language is very complicated. They say it's something like Antishak. There is an Irish language. Nobody really has to talk it. We don't have to learn it. Everybody knows English. It's a different type of English. It's a different vocabulary, very different accents. But it's very easy to communicate. Now, this is the city of Waterford, just about 10, 12 miles of where we live. The River Shore runs through it. The main Catholic cathedral. There's a lot of pleasure boats. That's about all I'll point out there. Down, this is now crossing the bridge of the same river and the same street view. This is the same cathedral tower here. And driving down that street on the right side of the road. Most Americans come over and say we drive on the wrong side. But the left side is the right side. Depends where you're coming from. Most cities would have pedestrian areas. This is one of them. And in that pedestrian area, every Friday and Saturday, we have a market stall selling baked goods, jams, cakes. It's my sister Hannah. Every Christmas, this was last Christmas, but every Christmas they have a market every day leading up to Christmas for about 2 weeks. Now we'll take you on a quick tour through the countryside, a number of scenic shots. It's always green. As I said, the grass is very lush. The grass is green year-round. It hardly ever freezes cold enough to kill it in the winter. It's very sweet. It raises... The cows have rich milk, very yellow butter, They grow fast racehorses. It's just very good grass. And it's still frequent to see them moving them on the road. A lot of stone bridges, a lot of rivers, a lot of castles, stone walls. This is a fairly basic castle, but quite frequently you see these scattered throughout the countryside. Long ago they would have used them to store the grain or their food to keep them safe from rival clans. Very elaborate Lismore Castle. This castle has extensive gardens outside. You can tour the gardens, but you can't tour the castle. The public can't anyway. This is Kilkenny Castle, and we've been through there many times. I'm sure some of you here have as well, whoever has been over Kilkenny Castle. Countryside tends to be, or the coast tends to be very rugged, often cloudy skies. That's what keeps it green, and houses, villages scattered throughout. They like the colorful houses and colorful doors. You can't see the doors here, but it's common to have brightly colored doors. A lot of the mountains are very rugged. You won't find a lot of tree-covered mountains. They tend to be very rocky. A lot of mountain sheep. It's a very Catholic country. You never know when you'll come up on a shrine. It can be a very elaborate big thing, or this was back in the mountains somewhere. You just don't know when it'll pop up. Very much predominantly Catholic. People go light a candle, say their prayers, and try to work their way into heaven. There are many ruins. This is actually taken from inside the Rock of Cashel. Some of you might remember that name. The roofs would have been made out of wood, and they've long since rotted away. But the stones stays for centuries. From up there on the Rock of Cashel, you look down the fields. This is another ruins down the fields. Abbeys from hundreds of years ago, maybe even 1,000 years ago, just falling into disrepair. Some are fixed up, like the Rock of Cashel. There's many tours gone through there, and they're renovating some of the buildings. But many ruins, they just leave to the course of nature. Out on the west coast, these are the Cliffs of Moher, 700 or 800 feet tall, these cliffs, facing the wild Atlantic out to the west. Now, these are the cliffs closer home, near Dunmore East. There's a walk that goes from Dunmore East to the cottage where we used to live. And we've taken that walk up along these cliffs here many times. If you look off in the distance here, you can just about not see it. There's a little speck of the Hookhead Lighthouse. We can see the flash of the lighthouse in the night sky. It blinks every 3 seconds. This body of water here is the Waterford Harbor. It's the harbor that leads into the river that goes into Waterford City, about 10 miles inland. And around the Hookhead Lighthouse is very treacherous, rocky water that this is the lighthouse up close. There's been some form of light there for over 1,000 years that monks used to light fires there to warn ships of the treacherous area. The tower is a fairly basic tower. It's not that tall. I'm not sure the exact height. It has steps winding around inside the walls, and you can see a few narrow windows here. That would be the steps just inside there. You can take tours. We've been in there countless times with guests, and you can walk out on this balcony here looking out, and it's a great place, very interesting place to take a tour. When we moved there in 96, the light was still turned on and off manually, morning and evening, and the last light keeper still gives tours of the lighthouse, and his name is Joe. He's our favorite tour guide, and we know him well enough. I begged an old burnt-out light bulb off of him, so he gave me an old bulb. It's 1,000-watt, 240-volt, and it's magnified with a number of sets of magnifying lenses, Fresnel lenses. I don't know if you know that name, but it magnifies it much brighter than the 1,000 watts seen from many miles around. The tower was built, I should research it more, it's around 1000 AD was the tower was originally built, and very important part of sea life. Now it's turned on and off automatically. It's run by computer, by weather monitors. There's a fog horn that goes when there's thick fog. These are the steps inside, over around 200 steps going up, and different. That's at least three or four stories inside of it. The lightkeeper used to live inside, but now it's just open for tours. This would have been one of the shots from on top of the lighthouse. Now, these are the cliffs again by us, the cliff walk. We've taken, again, countless times. It's a beautiful scenic walk along the water. At the end of that walk is this cottage where we used to live when we first married for over 6 years. That was our home. Pauls were there a number of times. And we have since built a new house, and this was getting rather small for us. And we were a bit fed up with the cold. It's a thatch roof, no other roof or ceiling inside, so the wind comes in one side very nicely and goes out the other side, taking out the heat with it. And so it's impossible in a stormy winter's eve to warm it up very well. You just put on the layers and hope for the best. Looking out from there, this was our view. Often there were waves crashing on the rock. Sometimes rainbows. We enjoyed the view. It was great to watch the sea. It wasn't far to the water, maybe 200 yards. Now this is the village of Dunmore East. Can't see a lot of the fishing boats there, but here on the right are a bunch of fishing nets piled up. Lifeboat station is here, very important part of the village. Lifeboat is just here in the distance. There's an ice factory here that the fishing boats load up on ice to put their fish on ice. There's an auction building here. We used to be able to go and buy fish from the auction house. That has now been changed. We could get it straight off the boats from the auction. Very fresh, good fish for cheap. That's a closer-up of the lifeboat. Very important part of any harbor. Lobster pots here on the right. The fishermen would put the smelliest, rottenest, yuckiest fish inside for bait, and that attracts lobsters. Different fishing boats. There's also a lot of pleasure craft, especially in the summer. It's very busy, very full, popular place to come for holidays. Now, in the village, I pointed out the auction house before. That's the roof of the auction house. This is down right near the harbor. This is a memorial for all those who have lost their lives at sea or on the water. There's a marble wall, curved marble wall behind it here, with the names of all those lost at sea. Frequently, there's fishing boats going down for mysterious reasons. They often don't know. They go down too quickly to save most people. Sometimes one or two are rescued. And in 07, there was quite a spate of bad weather and boats going down. There was about a dozen that lost their lives in January of 07. And two or three different boats. One, there were five or six local fishermen that made a huge, huge impact. Of course, they were looking for any scrap of evidence or survivors for weeks afterward. Found nothing. Very sad. And so a small fishing community like this is very close. The first Saturday of every March, there's a memorial service held here at this monument in remembrance of those lost at sea. And this is just part of the crowd that came out this last year. They asked us to sing a few songs at this memorial service, and I just point out the one lady here is a widow lady of one of those that lost her husband in 07. And her two daughters here, they come into our store frequently. We know them. We see them a few times a week. And a number of these others are good neighbors, friends that we know very well. And so it was just a time to share in their grief with them. They don't have a graveyard to go to, a cemetery, a tombstone to go to. This is where they come to rub their hand over the name of their loved one, bring flowers. It's like a cemetery. They, like I said, they often don't have any scrap of evidence left. Here's the widow I pointed out earlier coming down to the main part. They had asked my father to read a few prayers. They have different songs. This is the local Catholic priest. We're good friends with him. And this is the one of the lifeboat captains. And so it was just a time for us to commemorate and share their grief with them. As I said, you're building God's kingdom here. We endeavor to do it in Europe. And I don't know what all Paul has told you about Europe. We are over here in the west, in fact, the most westerly point of Europe. And this is the Irish Sea. Irish Sea was pointed out. We would have to cross all of England and then the English Channel. And Belgium is this little green spot here. We used to have some very good friends. We'd go oversee them, but they up and moved to Kansas. So we have to come over here to Kansas to see them. And but to find our nearest, the nearest plain church to us, we can't just go down the road to have fellowship with other believers like us. We have to go to Poland for the nearest believers. It's about 24 hours to travel to Belgium by land and sea. It's about a day and a half at least, would you say, Paul? I'm not sure you've made that trip yourself, probably, but it's almost a three-day travel to go from Ireland to Poland on land and sea, depending how much time you stop, of course. But flying, it's about a three-hour trip. My sister is there now teaching English at the mission in Poland, and I haven't been there yet, but I hope to go in the next year. Other believers are down in Romania. I'm sure you know of the mission there, and in Ukraine. So that's four plain churches that we know of in Europe. And at this point, we pray that God would send more reapers into the harvest. We welcome you now to Dunmore East Christian Fellowship, the name of our church. This is the church building from the outside, and the church on the inside, and the church filled with people. Sometimes we roast what we call sausages, much like your hot dogs after church for Sunday lunch. We have more common fellowship dinners, but when the weather's nice, we like to eat outside like this. This was a church photo taken about a year ago, but a number of families were missing. A number of more families have joined us since then. But just to point out, you can't see very well. William McGrath is here in the center. His wife Alice is here, and daughter is Melanie is over here in the corner. I have pictures of most everyone else except them, just to point them out. And that's my parents. Dan and Barbara Yoder. Oldest sister Anita, I said, is now in Poland teaching. Regina is in California teaching at a Russian Baptist school there. Esther is at home there, and Hannah's at home with us. Me and my wife, my brother Nathaniel, we'll have pictures of our families later. Here's our family now. Baby Josiah is 4 months old. Jocelyn is 3 next week. Joseph is 4 and Patrick is 5. And this is my brother Nathaniel and his wife Ruth. Ruth is a sister to Larry. Is Larry here tonight? Okay. They have 3 boys. Ken Miller and Linda, some of you might know them from Stewart's Draft. They just moved over in July. And they replaced the Ed Yoder family. Eds were from Indiana. Eds have now moved down to Arkansas. And Ken's came over to take their place. Wesley and Karen Sensenig and their little girl. Wes is the one that's spearheading the Boys Camp project, along with my brother Nathaniel. Gabriel Yancey, his wife Jennifer, they have had a baby since this picture was taken, but they live in Dublin, and he's taking vet school in Dublin, but he comes down every Sunday for church. So we're glad to have him joining the church, especially on Sundays. The lady on the right there is Libby Turner. She is one of our school teachers from Oregon. She's there now for the second year. And if you've been over, you will not forget Jimmy O'Brien, as Irish as they come. And he lives in this mobile home down the bottom of the field below the church. The photos I had earlier are all family members of the church. There's a lot more attending the church, and I'll have photos of them after this. But I just put this map together, these numbers, to show where the people come from. 26 of us come from Ireland, and I get that number from anyone basically born in Ireland, all our children. Anyone originating from Ireland would have 26 from there. A family of 7 moved over from Wales. 4 individuals originally from the UK, England. There are 8 from Poland. 3 from Ukraine. Another family of 7 from Russia. Of course, there's some from the States as well. 20, that would include myself and my wife, any of us born in the States here. 3 from Canada, 1 from Brazil, and 1 from Iran. So you can see it's a fairly diverse group. Any Sunday morning we'd have 9 or 10 countries represented. A total of usually a minimum of 80 people, sometimes 90 with visitors or more. The church is full, and we praise God for that. I was going to say something else, but it slipped my mind. Now, this is one of the Polish families. Oh, yeah, now I remember. All except the family from Wales, they were all living in Ireland when they found out about us and moved to us. It was only the family from Wales that moved, especially to our church from Wales. Ireland is becoming very diverse, many different nationalities in the country. So none of these other families would have moved from over here to join us. They would have been living in the country for some time before coming to us. But this was a Polish family originally, Chris and Ivana Januszewski. And they've been with us for, 6 years, I'd say, or more. Colin and Rachel Patton, they've been with us for about a year now. They have English origins, but they've been living in Ireland for years, 5 girls. Thomas and Katrina Frey were originally from Poland. Hugh Gregory Smith and his wife Jeanette, this is the family that moved from Wales. He was formerly an Anglican priest, and through preaching the word, through studying the word, he just couldn't go along with what the Anglican Church stood for, especially infant baptism, to name one issue. He was expected, required, requested to baptize infants and proclaim they're saved, and he just couldn't do it. And so eventually he had to resign. He resigned his priesthood and moved over to us for a plain church seeking for truth. Most of these families homeschool their children. Not all, but most of them do. This is David and Danny Kinsella. David is Irish. Daniela is the one from Brazil originally. They have 5 young children. This is a Ukrainian family, Vadim and Natalia. And I can't pronounce their last name. I won't try. If you've been there, you'll remember Derek and Jenny Wheatley. Jenny and the girls come regular to church. Derek supports them in this, but he does not make a profession still to this day of belief in Christ. You can help us pray for him. He's still very friendly. He's very supportive of sending his girls to our school. But there's just some wall that he cannot come to profess that there really is a God. Now, this was after a service at a fellowship dinner. 90 or more people, it can be a challenge to fit everyone in. We don't have a basement or a fellowship hall to go into, but just point out a few more people. This couple here is originally from Russia. They're actually seeking political asylum, having moved from the country of Israel. So there's interesting history, quite the story they have to excuse me. Quite the story they have to tell. They have, is it 6 children? These are just, you can barely see 2 of their girls here. They have, they've started attending most recently about 2 or 3 months. They started coming regular. This couple here is, well, this was the first time they came to visit. They're from elsewhere in Ireland. And they also have 6 young children. This was a young family that came to visit a few times. A lot of these families are seeking for truth, seeking for answers, how to raise their children in a godly way, because there's no other good example in the country. Even in the English-speaking world in Europe, there is nothing else in England as far as a plain witness. And so we're getting a lot of people, and I'm sure Paul can identify with a lot of seekers coming through. We do a lot of our own meat butchering. We raise a lot of chickens ourselves out on the fields, and we invite the church to come help work them up. And we do chicken. I think today is Wednesday. Today they did a beef. They did turkey since we're gone. We raise around 30 turkey every year. We raise a couple of pork usually every year. And we have 1 milk cow. And again, we share that milk around. We do a lot of things as a church, as a community. It's a good time to get to know everybody, good time of fellowship. And of course, the children like to help digging the chickens out of the water, if nothing else. And the school children took some time off. This was during a school day, but the school children were there too. But of course, there has to be plenty of chat afterward. During cleanup and picking the chicken off the bones, again, a good time to sit around the table and talk about anything. Here they are working up a beef in our workshop. Now, the past two summers, we've had different young people come from Germany to learn English. So this particular year, my sister Anita taught them English. This past year, there weren't as many. My sister Regina taught them. Good friends from Germany that we're familiar with, and they send some of their youth over to learn English. Here's Gabriel Yancey. Some of you might know his father, Bruce Yancey, many years in Ukraine. He's leading a youth choir here, and he's also leading a men's choir that I don't have a picture of, but they're practicing as we speak for Christmas programs. My sister Esther is leading a children's choir. Ages 4 to 14 are welcome. My sister Hannah also gives some assistance, but this is the first year these choirs are being practicing like this, but it's great to see this being developed. Here's our yes, this is getting close to his neck of the woods. Esther's dating a Gideon Yutzi from, anybody know him? Gideon Yutzi, I'm not sure, from Arkansas or around here. We hope to go meet his family yet, here in the next week. Yeah, she's has her mind a lot. Gideon is actually teaching with my sister Anita in Poland. So Gideon and Anita are over there teaching English, and just about a week or two ago, all the youth from Poland came to Ireland here to surprise the Irish youth, and it was quite a surprise from what I heard. Yeah, any other comment? Anytime, shout it out. Our second school teacher to point out is Quentin Weaver here. Most of you might know his father, Chester Weaver. I don't have a better picture of him. He teaches 8 of the upper grades here. There are 4 missing in another class. But this is his first year teaching at all, first year with us. And we're glad that he agreed to come teach for us. Here Libby is teaching the other 4, part of a class. And my youngest sister Hannah is teaching art to the youngest ones. She helps out a few days a week in the school. There's about 12 or 13 students altogether. Of course, there's recess time out in the yard. Now, this church building is just off the picture and to the left. I want to point out the workshop here behind the big old green shed is this one from another angle. We call Ideal Woodcrafts our furniture business. We make lawn furniture, picnic tables, benches, and so on. We import the timber from America here, ships out from Virginia. Pressure-treated yellow pine, very good quality. Any timber in the country comes from somewhere anyway, and we can ship it over for a reasonable rate in container, and there's nothing else comparable to it available in the country. Nobody else has timber like this. The workshop area, storage area, and another project we have as a church is, I showed pictures of this family before, Thomas and Katrina Frey. One of the ideas he had is to sell coal. He was originally from Poland, so he thought, well, he can import coal and sell it for business to provide for his family. So this is a banner he came up with to advertise his coal, and he didn't have enough cash to pay for the initial stock or inventory, so we as a church raised the cash to pay for 3 container loads of this coal from Poland. Here we are stacking it in one of our old sheds. It comes on containers in these pallets, and we stack it in here. And so he's selling it this winter, and he's trying to make a go of it to provide for his family. He used to drive taxi
But with the fall in economy, people aren't going out like they used to. People aren't spending like they used to. But everybody, most everybody, burns coal for heat, and it's very popular to use coal. So he's trying to work his way into the retail market. Another project, a big project we have, is a store. It's just a local country store, about halfway between Dunmore East and the city of Waterford. It's what we call a petrol garage, or you might call it a gas station, a convenience store. The front door. From the front door, you can look clear out the back. That's the bakery. I'll have pictures of the bakery in the back. The front counter. The book room was a recent addition, so that one of Dad's dreams was always to sell, to have a Christian bookstore. There's nothing else in the area for many miles around. There's no other Christian bookstore around. So he imports a lot of books from the States here, mostly choice books. And this is a choice book rack. Here he has six or seven of those racks around the country at different churches, other bookstores, that he keeps restocked and updated and serviced. So Dad has a ministry keeping choice books stocked at other places. But he just wanted an expanded selection that he can put out many Christian books. A sort of a hideaway, quiet corner behind the busy store part. People can come and sit down and read and have a coffee or whatever they like. At the other end of the same room are these shelves, and my mom does the sewing. My sister Hannah does the pottery. This is a close-up. It's just simple, plain, traditional Irish pottery. She turns it on the wheel, and she has a kiln where she fires it, she glazes it, and does a good job. This is now the bakery. It's not a big place. There's two big commercial ovens here, but they churn out a lot of carrot cakes, a lot of scones, a lot of brown bread, and it's a very good business for the mission. It provides a lot of profit. When the furniture sales have been very low the past year or two, and so we've lost a lot of profit that way, but the bakery continues by God's blessing to do well, and we thank him for that. Ideal Woodcrafts, again, we have a sign there at the store, and out to the store is off way off to the left here off the picture, but we have a display here. A lot of children, families like to come play on the swings and slides. Of course, we sell a lot of them too. Now this is our home, the house we built in the last year and a half, and we happily call that home now. It has no drafts like we were used to, a lot easier to heat, a lot more space, and we're grateful that this has worked out. The view from the kitchen window, and the same view, slightly different angle. The church building is just in these cluster buildings to the right, about 2 miles or less across the field, and a little over 2 miles in the distance. This is a deep blue sea out here again. We can just see a peak of it. We're on about 14 acres of our mission property here. It's not our personal house, not our personal property. Anything we have is mission property. The vehicles, the houses, anything we sell is all mission funds. Some of our cattle here. I mentioned we have about 12 or 13 cattle between old ones and young ones, and those are the ones we butcher then, as we need meat. Here we are planting daffodil bulbs this fall before we left. 1 year was our potato crop. This was down in the cottage garden. And potatoes tend to do very well in the country, damp and cool. And we were supposed to be digging for potatoes, but what the boys were collecting, fishworms instead of potatoes. We like to take walks. Nice summer evenings, beautiful. Late summer, the boys keep their eyes peeled to the sides of the roads for wild blackberries that grow. And the boys love to go on walks for that. Or down to the beach to collect stones and shells. You're never more than, 50 miles from the beach, from the coast. So you don't have to go far. Now, I pointed out the church, the workshop, is this gray roof here, and this used to be our workshop. It used to be an old stone barn. We had the workshop in the bottom floor, very small, very tight headroom of about 7 foot, width of 16 foot, and about 40 foot long. And we churned out a lot of furniture in that little place, but it was just not suitable for long term. So we put up this big, nice purpose-built workshop, and my brother Nathaniel converted this old stone barn into a dwelling house. He did most all of the work, did a fine job, and now Kens are living in it. They put on this, what we call a conservatory. You might call a glass house or glass room, I don't know. Kens planted shrubs, flowers, whitewashed the walls. They're very good at landscaping, you might know. And this is the other side of it. Again, the workshop behind it. They'll be planting garden here in this space. Here's where Nat, we call Nathaniel Nat, Nat and Ruth live. They live out near the mountains, near the camp location, about 45 minutes from where we are. And this is where Wes and Karen live, in a small cottage. They're both just renting these places. Again, the mountains in the background. And now we shift gears. The rest of the presentation will be about Cumber Wilderness Camp. Wes and Nat, as I said, are spearheading this project, and the rest of the slides will be how we are endeavoring to start this project. A map of the location. Wes's live up here near the top, and Nat's live down near the bottom. The camp location is roughly in the middle there, and if you look closely, it'll change into a satellite view of the same land. And Cumber Wilderness Camp. We get the name from the Cumber Mountains. You can see the snowy mountains. It's like that a few times a year. I'm sure it is today. They're having a lot of snow and ice there as we speak. But that's the Cumber Mountain Range. That's why we've called it the Cumber Wilderness Camp. The trees we have our sights, the forest we have our sights set on is under the arrow there on the right. And zooming in, here you can see the trees again, contrasting with the snow. The mountains, as I said, don't tend to be treed. The mountains were cleared many years ago by, we blame the English for that, by clearing the forests off the mountains. And now most any forestry is replanted forests for commercial value, to be raised for MDF board, basically, or OSB. It's evergreen pines, poor quality as far as furniture or lumber is concerned. This is how it looks more commonly during the summer. Again, the dark green is the hill. It's sort of a foothill of nestled along the Cumber Mountains. Now, in the beginning, the camp development began in December of 06. A series of events led to my father writing to Bald Eagle Boys Camp about the idea of starting a boys camp in Ireland. So he did some communication over several months, and in 07 then Wes and Karen moved over to initially to teach school for a year, but also with the intention of researching and developing a boys' camp project. You could ask, what is the need, or is there a need in the country? But any society that doesn't go by biblical principles has a lot of unruly youth. In the small population, we have over 5,000 youth in residential government homes that the government tries to deal with the problem by putting them into care homes, spends millions and millions of euro, and it doesn't solve any problems. It doesn't really help the youth very much at all. There's some youth in adult prisons that shouldn't be there at all. They should be in some other more suited to themselves. And because of lack of Irish facilities, the government sometimes sends youth to other countries, sometimes to England or Sweden, because there's not enough care for them in the country. There are many different newspaper reports frequently in the newspapers, in the media. There's about all the money they spend for troubled teens. At-risk children sent abroad, as was mentioned out. Urgent need for places. And so the youth are very hurting, are very drugs, immorality, you name it. There's a lot of problems. The family is in breakdown, lone parents, divorces are just much the same as here. It's very much very similar as far as morals and so on. So in October of 08, things had progressed enough to appoint a board of directors. As was mentioned, Bald Eagle had some input. They were asked to designate Mission Interest Committee. One of Mission Interest Committee members should be here. Is Lauren here tonight?
Yeah.
Yes. Lauren, you might have been involved in designating these two. Melvin Glick is another MIC committee member, and Mark King is also on the board. Mark formerly worked at Bald Eagle. So Bald Eagle designated Dwight Martin and David King. Mark, Dwight, and David all have boys camp experience. Dwight and David were very instrumental in starting Bald Eagle Boys Camp. So they make a good team. Dwight is the chairman, and they have a lot of energy, interest, ideas in getting this camp started. There is a fifth member, an Irish representative of myself. So to find a wilderness in Ireland, throughout 2008, well, as soon as Wes got there, he was scouring the countryside, every square inch of the island. He went over with a fine-tooth comb looking for a wilderness in Ireland. And some people would say Ireland has no wilderness. It's a small island. The mountains aren't forested like you would see out in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Maryland, you name it. We were really stumped to find a suitable location. Most of the forest land is owned by a government agency called Quilcha. Quilcha raises these trees, as I said, for profit, for commercial reasons. So if you find a forest, it's more than likely owned by Quilcha. And they have their commercial reasons to keep it, to harvest it. They can't just dispose of it for anybody coming along like us. So Wes found this plot, this hill I showed you before. Of course, Quilcha owned it. So we had to approach Quilcha about the possibility of using their land. Eventually, a proposal to use their land was sent to them, because we couldn't just buy a mountain or buy a wilderness and run a boys' camp on it. So here we are, these blow-ins from America that are coming with this far-out, fantastical idea to start this wilderness camp. And the Irish just roll their eyes and say, oh, don't you have enough troubled teenagers in America to look after? Why are you coming over here? And so it was with much trepidation and prayer that we put together a proposal to send to Quilcha. We used our solicitor, or you would call him a lawyer. We went through him to write up a letter for us to give us credibility, because as I said, we were just these nobodies from America that Quilcha would pass us off like a bothersome fly or mosquito. And so we went through our solicitor to give us weight and to convince them that we're not just pie-in-the-sky kind of people. So we sent a thick proposal, trying to detail what we intended to do in their woods. We couldn't buy it from them. We were asking for some kind of license or lease to use their woods. I get back to you to their answer after a few more slides here. The trees we had in question are these trees again, looking from the mountains. This is zooming in, the same view, and the I'll tell you more about these 15 acres in a minute. From the rock up here, reversing the angle, is this view, and again, the 15 acres, which I'll get to in a second. You can see this was the hill here. You can just make out the trees actually extend down here. There's a lower section here as well, which I'll talk to you about more soon. Now, Quilcha, in April of 2009, responds to our proposal. Much to the amazement of everybody, including the solicitor, they agreed to lease the property to us in one-year segments. Of course, they had five conditions. It wasn't just throwing it in our lap. But just to get their cooperation was a huge step. To even talk to us, this is the letter they sent us, that agreed to work with us. The first condition they put to us was access those trees. They're up there in the mountains. There's no public road to it. How do we get there? And so the 15 acres I pointed out earlier were purchased to access those trees. And I'll have a good map later showing you how the 15 acres came into this. So we fixed that condition. The second was we had to tell Quilcha detailed site plans, exactly the activities, what we're going to do in their trees. The third and scary one was the public consultation. They said, and every neighbor within 1 mile radius has to be notified, and we have to hold a public meeting locally and put notices in the local paper, invite everybody to this meeting to tell them what we're doing in their backyard. We approached this with much trepidation. We didn't know which neighbor would put up the biggest fight. We didn't know what they'd say at all to these these strangers from America and bringing bad boys into their backyard. So Wes and Nat went around to all the neighbors in question and met with all of them, I think, and invited them to this public meeting. We held it here in September of this last year. We had at least 15 or so local neighbors come to the meeting. Wes gave a short presentation of what we intend to do and what we did through the summer. And Wes and Nat had been doing a few programs with local youth groups during the summer. And there was one neighbor, or at least two, that were asking difficult questions. And Wes wasn't sure how to take them and how ornery they were going to get. They were asking, what if the boys get loose and come down to the barn and set their hay barn on fire, or break into their house, and you name it. And there was, unbeknownst to us, God arranged another lady to be there that knew us well, that had arranged for some of her youth groups to come out with us through the summer. And she spoke up and allayed the fears of the neighbors in a miraculous way. The neighbors left telling Wes, "We're not here to stand in your way. You're doing a good work. Go ahead." And this was just amazing that they didn't cause a problem. Any one of them could really raise a ruckus and derail the whole project. But God spoke to them. And we can check that off the list. They wanted to make sure we were registered with local authorities, which we were. This was an easy one to provide documentation. But the ongoing challenge is what you would call building permits. If we want to build a tent in the woods, if we want to build, have a toilet out in the woods, you name it, any kind of building, anything needs a permit, or what they call planning permission. There's just so much red tape to get permission for something like this. You can notice we received these five conditions in the April of 2009. That was well over a year ago. We've been working on this ever since. And the red tape is endless, to be honest. There it will never be an end to paperwork and you name it. But we're nearly there. We need just to finalize the planning permission with the county. Here in the next few days, we'll get a second answer. The first answer from them, the 1st of November, was that we can't, or if we put a toilet out in the trees, we have to put a full septic system, conventional septic system, out in the rocky forests. And it's just preposterous. So we had to resubmit plans. And I think they'll be workable, but it just takes time. It just takes a lot of time. But during the summer, Wes and Nat did various activities in the trees, in the mountains here. Anybody in the whole wide world can go hike through the mountains, hike through the trees. Nothing is off limits. You can camp overnight as long as you don't leave a trace after you, clean up after you, and don't have a camp more than 30 days in succession. Zooming in, the trees are again, you can see outlined. The public road came in this far and stopped. The red circles are where we proposed to have our camp. Initially, Camp A, we were going to have it up here on the hill. Well, as things develop, we are sort of revising it downward, and to start with, have a smaller camp down here in the lower section. But coming in the public road, we were left set. We have to cross a stream. There's a ford to drive through. It doesn't quite reach these woods. And what do we do as far as setting up any even temporary buildings, any kind of home base camp? Again, by God's provision, these fields outlined in green became available for sale. With the sale was a right-of-way from the end of the public road through these trees into these 15 acres, which gave us access to the upper area. So this was purchased here in the last year for a number of reasons. One major reason is it gave us credibility with Quilcha, with all the officials, with the county, to actually purchase land. Gave us a lot of weight, gave our... we had a footprint, a foot in the door. We're saying, we're serious about this project, we're going to make it work. And we put in a few temporary buildings here at the bottom of the field that we didn't need, you know, temporary movable buildings you don't need permission for, and we can work from that to start with. So again, God moved in the right time. The lower section here is for staff quarters, a building site down the road if needed. Now, a few details on the purchase. The agreed price was 135,000 euro, which converts roughly to 185,000 US dollars. Now, it was interesting earlier tonight to hear that announcement by about Anabaptist Financial, because a generous brother donated the majority of this money to Anabaptist Financial for us to buy this land. So this is Anabaptist Financial at work in Ireland. They have loaned us the money at low interest that enabled us to buy this land at the right time. Of course, that loan is still, or that is now a debt for us to pay off, to pay back to Anabaptist Financial. And of course, any donations to pay that back is more than welcome. This is still outstanding. We're paying about $900 a quarter for interest, but a lot of this, most of this, I think it's about $150,000 is still outstanding as debt. The first thing we did with 15 acres was plant it full of hardwood trees. As I said, you don't have hardly any hardwood forests, and we planted just about 17,000 trees on those acres, one by one. Different people, anybody we could ask. There's two boys even from Sir Straff came for about 2 weeks to help, and the school teachers came out. It took about 2 weeks to get those 15 acres planted full of oak trees, ash trees, and a selection of other native hardwoods. These pictures were taken during this summer. They put out a nice sprout of leaves and shoots. Some of the ash trees especially shot up about a foot. Most of them grew very well. The last evening, we invited the whole church out to finish the planting, and you can see the forest thickly planted behind him here, can't you? It's going to take years and years. The government helped us with a grant to pay for the planting, and they will give us a little bit a premium every year, very small. But the main reason was just to use the land for some purpose down the road, not so much to use the forest right now because they're so small. But as I mentioned earlier, the need for a home base near the trees. The higher peak is up the back here, and the lower section is down to our left. Behind the one taking the picture, well, I'll get to that later. I mentioned the summer activities that Wes and Nat did with local youth groups. They volunteered with different youth groups, not religious groups, just sort of local clubs kind of thing, that the leaders brought out boys, sometimes boys and girls, and they went hiking up into the mountains a lot. Sometimes they did overnight camping. It was never more than one night at a time or one day at a time. They enjoyed orienteering, which is the group splits up into two teams, and then they follow a compass and a map to go on different routes and see which team can do it the quickest. And of course, a highlight is cooking. Hamburgers over fire. They make their own stew. Or in these Dutch ovens, they can make pizza or anything else that you can make at home in your oven. They take the coals off of fire like this and put it on the lids of these, what they call Dutch ovens, and makes it very hot all the way through, and they can bake anything on there. Now, we moved this portable cabin onto the bottom of that site, and one of the groups painted it green to match the landscape and to blend in. Inside the cabin, we have bookshelves, tables, and benches, and at the other end of the cabin is a small kitchen facilities. We also nestled a storage cabin in behind the trees. We store the gear, shovels, tents, backpacks, you name it, in the storage cabin. Now, this is part of one of the groups they had during the summer. Um, I have various scenery shots now of their hiking trips through the mountains. Here they found a cleft of the rock to build a fire and roast their sausages. There's beautiful scenery looking down from up on top. Just incredible. To hike overnight takes a lot of gear, big, huge backpacks. The harder the boys work, the better they sleep. And so the steeper the mountain, the better it works too. A lot of lakes up in the mountains. Beautiful scenery. Clear, cold water. Glacier lakes, in fact. They say they were built or made originally by glaciers from the mountains. And there's Arctic char in those lakes. Only other place in the world they're found is in the Arctic. But somehow God put Arctic char in those lakes. From above, and if it's raining down in the valley, you can sometimes look down on a rainbow. Incredible scenery. Beautiful mountain, but it's rugged, as you see, very stony, just a little bit of heather, barren. You just don't have the unlimited trees. Now, in considering Irish architecture, Irish buildings, and considering the camp, we want to identify with the Irish and how they built in the past. Of course, they would have used a lot of stone that lasts for a long time, but even before the stone, they would have used this type of building, which has, of course, a thatch roof, low mud walls, called a roundhouse. Sometimes an entrance like that. It could be oval. And we want to incorporate this kind of design in the camp somehow. We want to make it an Irish camp as much as possible. So this is one aspect that we're considering. Originally, or to start to build one of those, they would have built or stuck poles into the ground, woven sticks between the poles, and then daubed it with mud on both sides. And put poles up for teepees, rafters, and tied it with put on thatch for the roof. Now, of course, if we build it, we'd go with fairly modern masonry walls probably and so on. But there's different people have made modern similar structures of all types. But the roundhouse is still a popular ancient dwelling. If you've noticed, we have a roundhouse incorporated into our logo. That's where that comes from. Now we're about done, but we want to count our blessings, our assets, as this project. Of course, the power of God is unlimited. I told you a little bit of how He's worked already. If I look any distance into the future, I think it's impossible. This project is impossible. It can't work. Our solicitor had told us that earlier, we're attempting the impossible. The Quiltra will not respond favorably to us, but he doesn't know the power of God. So the power of God is definitely our greatest asset and has been evident so far. Of course, prayer is very powerful. This is where you can help. We have the support of experienced camp leaders. As I said, three of the camp board are experienced. Wes has extensive camp leadership experience, and Bald Eagle still gives us much counsel and advice. Missionaries, mission has been there for around 18 years, so a number of people know us that long, and it helps to give us credibility that we're not just newly arrived, and yet you have to be there for generations before you're considered Irish. But at least we have this amount of experience. Another way you can help is to send donations. As I mentioned, to repay the land, there's an ongoing expense of Wes's and Nat's are living off of camp funds, and it takes about $5,000 a month to support them and the camp. So there's a lot of ongoing costs. MIC has been doing a lot, in fact, donating most of the funds to keep operating to this point. They take care of the funds here in the States. Any donations to the camp sent to MIC, Marvin Wyrick will put it in the special camp fund, and then we use it for camp projects. So any donations, church-wise or private, anybody can send any money to MIC. So this is the sunset over the Kummer Mountains there in the distance. I have a bit of further info if you want to research us longer. And of as I mentioned, the email address to subscribe to the newsletter is there in the box. news@wilderness.ie. If you send any email at all to that address, Wes will put you on the mailing list and any future newsletters will be sent to you. And until we meet again, may God, who loves us all, hold you in the palm of his hand. Thank you for your attention, for your interest in the work in Ireland, and I hope this isn't the last time we come to Kansas.
Thank you, Brother Jonathan. A lot of things happening there, isn't there? And it's been especially interesting for me to see all the changes taking place and how God is leading. I know it's late, later than usual, but I think we've enjoyed it all. Just wait a minute. Does someone have an urgent question on your mind? Otherwise, you can ask Jonathan later. Thanks again, Jonathan, for sharing with us this evening. And just pray that God would bless his work in Ireland. Shall we rise for prayer? Father in heaven, we want to thank you for the glimpse of what you're doing in Ireland. And we thank you the way you have led and the building of your kingdom. Pray that you would continue to lead, especially in the Wilderness Boys Camp. And pray that you would guide and that you would bring healing to many hurting hearts. And thank you for the healing that you have done and are doing. We just pray that you would grant grace and pray your blessing on each one here this evening, Lord. May your great name be glorified and honored. In Jesus' name, amen.